Mr. Tom Reedley will present argument for petitioner Anthony Rolano.
May it please the court, my name is Tom Reedley and I do represent Amarillo Oil Company's petition in this matter. This is an oil and gas case that involves Panhandle Field, Texas. It's an important case, I believe, because it's the first title suit to reach this court arising out of the so-called white oil controversy. The suits involve, many of these suits involve different title instruments and different tracts of land, but some of the most important legal arguments are common to the various suits. The case before this court arises from the fact that my client, Amarillo Oil Company, owns the gas rights in a 61-acre tract of land overlying the Panhandle Field. Energy Agra, the respondent, owns the oil encasing the gas rights in that same tract. Out of that split ownership, two questions arose which caused Amarillo Oil to go to the trial court in the first place. The first question is, what is casing head gas as used in this particular title instrument? Is it limited to the gas produced from an oil stratum with oil, which is the statutory definition and is what my client contends? Or does it include all gas produced from an oil well, including gas that may come from a zone in the well that's productive of gas only? That's basically Energy Agra's position. The second question that caused us to go to court is, assuming casing head gas is limited to gas from an oil stratum, does the rock layer, which is called the brown dolomite, under this particular lease, produce oil? Or is it, in this case, as a matter of fact, productive of gas only? Those were the two basic questions presented to the trial court when the case was filed. The trial court submitted the second question to the jury. The jury found for the respondent Energy Agra. The jury found that the brown dolomite rock formation, which is a part of the Panhandle Reservoir, can produce 6 barrels of oil per day from each of the two Energy Agra wells. Amarillo Oil appealed that ruling on basically the grounds of insufficient and or no evidence to support the verdict. The Court of Appeals, without discussion, found sufficient evidence. But the court went further. It found that Texas courts had no jurisdiction over this case because the Railroad Commission had classified the Energy Agra wells as oil wells. Now, the court did not explain why it had no jurisdiction to interpret the title instrument. I think there's no argument that I know of, really, that the Railroad Commission cannot interpret the title instrument, the 1953 assignment that split the oil rights from the gas rights. That's the main issue in the case. The Court of Appeals seemed to assume that casing head gas meant all gas produced from an oil well. But that has never been Amarillo Oil's position. It has always been our position that casing head gas is limited to the statutory definition, that is, gas produced from an oil zone or an oil stratum with oil. Since that was the issue, and since only the courts can settle that issue, only the courts can tell us what that instrument means, and ultimately only this court can tell us what it means, the courts necessarily had jurisdiction to decide that. And we have to be able to present that in the court system. There's no other way to resolve it. So the real question, I think, is what does the phrase oil encasing head gas mean in this case, in this title instrument? That's the most important question. That's the question that has the most far-reaching impact, because even though title instruments differ, there's a lot of similarity. from one lease to another. And I would submit the best answer to that question, the best approach to it, is rather than go through all the cases that have been cited in the briefs and the different uses of the terms, to just look at the assignment in the context of what I believe are the undisputed facts about the history of this lease and a little bit about what the Panhandle Field is. The original 61-acre lease covered both oil and gas rights. A man named Housie took the lease in 1952 from the landowner, and it covered a standard lease. It covered oil and gas, all the hydrocarbons. No division. Now, Mr. Housie drilled a well in 1952 on the track, and he completed it as a gas well called the Hodges No. 1. He completed it in a reservoir known as the Panhandle Field. Now, the Panhandle Field development, that reservoir's development, goes back to the 1920s. It's a huge field, I think approximately 140 miles long. At one time, I believe it was the largest known gas reserve in the world. And it has also been one of Texas' largest oil-producing reservoirs. The field is made up of different rock layers that are laid down on top of each other. And under the Hodges lease, this varies a little bit in different parts of the field, but under the Hodges lease, the two rock layers that we'll be talking about are the brown dolomite, which is the uppermost layer on top, and the granite, sometimes divided into granite wash and weathered granite, but I'll just refer to it as granite, on the bottom. Over the field as a whole, most of the oil production has been from the northeast edge and certain other low-lying areas of the field. Like most fields, there are high areas, structurally high, and structurally low areas. And because oil is heavier than gas, it tends to accumulate in the low areas, whereas the gas tends to accumulate in the high areas. And in fields like the Panhandle Field, where you have both substantial oil and very substantial gas, the gas part, the layer that is above, is often referred to as a gas cap, simply because it sits above the oil. All the rock layers, including even the brown dolomite, which is the uppermost layer, in some parts of the field produced oil. Never been any question about that. But those are mainly in the lower areas. And in the higher areas, there are parts of the field that are high where the brown dolomite is entirely within the gas zone and not productive of gas. Now, in addition to the gas in the gas zone, which is what my client is concerned with, there is also gas in the oil zone. It's sometimes been described as a Coca-Cola. It dissolved in the Coke and sometimes trapped in bubbles. There is gas. And when the pressure is released, that gas will bubble out, just like the fizz in the Coke. Now, unlike the gas in the gas zone, which can be sealed off in an oil well, the gas that's actually in there with the oil cannot be separated from the oil during production. If you're going to produce oil, you're going to produce the gas that's down there in the oil zone itself. There's no question about that. So let me go back to the Hodges well. It was completed in the brown dolomite only, the topmost layer. And it was completed as a gas well in 1952, productive of gas only. In 1953, the lessee sold the Hodges well and the 61-acre lease, the predecessor and title of Amarillo Oil Company. But the original lessee, Mr. Housie, reserved the oil and casing head gas. At that time, there was no other well than the one gas well, so there was no well producing oil or claiming to produce either oil or casing head gas. And none came on the scene until about 30 years later when he had to drill. At the time of the 1953 assignment, and today, and back to 1935, continuously from 1935, the term casing head gas has been defined by statute as gas or vapor indigenous to an oil stratum and produced from such stratum with oil. If we apply the statutory definition, as my client contends, what happened in 1953 was what's called a horizontal severance. For instance, it's not uncommon in the industry to go out and one party wants the deep rights and one wants the shallow rights. So they draw a line, 5,000 feet, say. and convey all the leasehold rights below 5,000 feet to one party and all the leasehold rights above 5,000 to another party. This is a little bit different because they didn't draw a line in stated foot or stated depth. But they said that the oil and casing head gas goes to one party and the gas rights go to another party. And under the statute, the casing head gas is limited to the gas in the oil stratum. So the oil zone, wherever it may be, they didn't know back in 1953 whether they'd find any oil or if so, at what depth. But they said, if you later go in and discover it, you've got the oil zone, both the oil and the gas within the oil zone. But the gas rights owner has the gas zone. And that, we contend, set forth a horizontal severance where our client, Amarillo Oil, has exclusive right to complete their well in the gas zone, and Energy Agri has the exclusive right to complete in the oil zone. Well, what is Energy Agri? What is their position? What do they say about this? They say that no, casing head gas is not limited to the oil zone. It includes all the gas produced from any well that is classified as an oil well. By statute, an oil well is a well that produces at least one barrel of oil for every 100,000 cubic feet of gas. So Energy Agri says as long as it keeps a ratio of at least one barrel of oil to 100,000 cubic feet of gas, it doesn't matter where the gas comes from. It owns all the gas produced from the well, even if it goes up the hole and completes in a gas zone where there's no oil. For example, under that view, under Energy Agri's view, if it could find three barrels of oil a day at the bottom of the hole, then that gives it a license to produce 300,000 cubic feet of gas from the gas zone, even though there's no oil up there. And it goes even further. It says that even if it can't find three barrels of oil in the bottom of the hole, that's really no problem, because it can come in and install a refrigeration unit on the surface of the ground that's capable of chilling the gas to minus 25 degrees. And when you chill gas like that, you liquefy part of it. And Energy Agri's position was, by freezing the gas and making some of it liquid, it could mix that with the oil, report it all as oil, and still keep producing 300,000 cubic feet, or whatever the well was capable of producing. Under that reading, under Energy Agri's reading of the meaning of casing head gas, Amarillo Oil and its predecessors, who produced the gas well for 30 years before Energy Agri appeared on the scene, have no exclusive right to produce the gas zone. All they have is the right to compete in the gas zone. In other words, Energy Agri says that it has the right to compete with us for the same gas, on the same acreage, at the same depth. I submit that's a strange way to divide property rights. And it's even stranger if you consider the Railroad Commission spacing rules that were in existence, not only in 1953, but back to the 1930s. Under the rules that apply to the Panhandle Field, the gas area and the oil area, there can only be one gas well on this tract. Normally it's one well for 640 acres, but if you had a small tract that hadn't been reasonably subdivided, you could get one well on it. But you can have up to six oil wells on the same tract, because the oil well spacing was either 10 or 20 acres at the operator's option. Furthermore, there's no requirement of how far an oil well has to be away from a gas well. There's no between well spacing under the commission rules. So under Energy Agri's theory, Amarillo Oil's predecessor, all they got by buying the gas rights in the gas well, which was producing from a known gas zone, was a non-exclusive right to compete for gas at a potential 6-to-1 competitive disadvantage. Potentially six oil wells competing for the same gas against one gas well. That doesn't make sense. That same argument was made by the same opposing counsel in Dorchester versus Harlow, which is a case now pending before this court, decided by the Amarillo Court of Appeals a few months after this case. A different panel of the Amarillo Court of Appeals considered basically the same issue and recognized that it made no sense and rejected it. It rejected the idea that the title instruments gave the oil rights owner a license to compete for the same gas. In that case, Brown Dolomite, the jury found it was a gas-only zone that prohibited the oil producer from producing out of the Brown Dolomite. I submit that neither in Harlow nor in the briefs that have been filed in this case has the other side explained how it makes sense
for the original lessee, the original lease owners, to have divided the rights so that all the oil and gas in the oil zone exclusively belongs to them, but all the gas rights owner gets is a non-exclusive license to compete for the same gas zone at a 6-to-1 disadvantage. To me, that sounds a lot like arguing what's mine is mine and what's yours is mine too.
What importance do you attach to the jury findings in the Dorchester versus Harlow versus this case?
Yeah, obviously, my position or my client's position is stronger in the Harlow case because the jury did find that the brown dolomite in that case was not productive of oil. Whereas in this case, the jury found the brown dolomite under this tract was productive of oil. But that is the second part of our application, my argument, which is, in this case, I think the evidence conclusively shows that the brown dolomite was not productive of oil. And that the jury disregarded the judge's instructions and basically counted the LPX likely as oil to reach its conclusion.
Did you preserve that point all the way by objection to the charge?
Your Honor, the charge was correct in our view. The judge instructed the jury that oil could only be considered what was liquid in the reservoir and liquid in the surface. So under that charge, if it was gas in the reservoir but only liquefied at the surface, it wouldn't be oil. I'm simply suggesting that by looking at the record as a whole, that the jury disregarded that charge in answering the verdict because there's no evidence to support their answers other than the LPX liquid, which whether that's oil or not is really a question of law.
I mean, did you object to the charge on the grounds there was no evidence to support an affirmative answer to that verdict?
Your Honor, I can't specifically answer that. I assume it was done. I did not try the case. Mr. Standard did. I don't know if he can answer that without consulting the record or not. In conclude the first part of the first point of the first question, I would say that submit that at minimum the court should reverse the dismissal for want of jurisdiction. Because title is a question for the courts, what the document means is a question for this court ultimately and not for the regulatory, the relevant commission or any other administrative agency. And because the ownership of gas does appear under deed documents does not depend on the happenstance of whether the gas is produced from an oil well or a gas well, but rather it depends on whether the gas is produced from an oil stratum with oil, which is what the statute says.
What are you asking us to do if we agree with you on the jurisdictional point?
If the court agrees on the jurisdictional point, but disagrees on the no evidence point, I submit it should reverse the disposition of the case, which was a dismissal for want of jurisdiction, on grounds that the courts do have jurisdiction to interpret the instrument, and that casing and gas is not simply what the regulatory agency, is not tied to what the regulatory agency classifies the well as. And if it disagrees on the no evidence point, it then can affirm on that issue. But the disposition of the case in any of...
We don't have a factual insufficiency point, which is brought forward.
We do. We do, Your Honor. That was the second part of my argument that I'm at right now.
So we have to send it back to CA?
I don't know that would be necessary. I think that the Court of Appeals considered both issues. It found there was sufficient evidence, but it found no jurisdiction. What we're saying is that there clearly was jurisdiction. The Court, apparently, to reach its conclusion, misinterpreted the title document. And that has to be done by the Court, and I think that issue can be disposed of by this Court without any remand. If the court thinks there's evidence to support the verdict, it can affirm it on that other ground. But I think it has to address the question of the jurisdiction, which involves the question of what is peaceful and what is.
So you are arguing there's no evidence. You're not asking us to.
No, I understand that this court cannot rule on the sufficiency. But the next point that I'd like to make is simply that we have submitted in our briefs that we submit there is no evidence to support the verdict, that the evidence conclusively establishes as a matter of law that the brown dolomite formation and these particular defendant wells, Energy Agro wells, are productive of only gas, that it is a gas threat.
Help clear this up. Assuming we agree with you that courts do have jurisdiction, the Railroad Commission's word is not final. And assuming that we think that there is more than a scintilla of evidence to support the jury verdict. In what posture are we then? Do we have to affirm the judgment of the Court of Appeals?
I don't think it would be proper for the court to affirm it under that assumption, because the Court of Appeals dismissed for lack of jurisdiction. It did not affirm the verdict.
All right.
So that has to be, that part of the disposition has to be reversed.
But then where would we be if you say they've already ruled on the sufficiency point, factual sufficiency point?
I think that this court can then simply address our position that there was no evidence.
All right, and assuming that we think that there was more than a scintilla, then where would we be?
Then I think the court would be reversing the dismissal for want of jurisdiction, but affirming on grounds that there was sufficient evidence to support the verdict, or that there was some evidence to support the verdict.
You'd lose it, but for different reasons.
That's right, Your Honor, but although I certainly don't think that that result should happen, the distinction is very important in the context of this dispute, because if the dismissal for want of jurisdiction should stand, there are many, many cases out there that could be tossed out the window. Whereas, it just like their cases pending in this court, the Harlow case where the jury found Brown Dolomite was not productive as well.
You turn this litigation into a, let the jury resolve it on a case-by-case basis.
Well, unfortunately, there are general legal questions, which includes the one I just addressed. What is casing congestion, which is being fought tooth and nail in every case over and over. But you can't get away from the fact that whether there's oil at a particular depth has to be looked at on a lease-by-lease basis. I mean, I wish there was a way to solve that, but that issue has to be tried.
In other words, you can believe that the statutory definition of casing head gas should be respected, that recognize that there are cases where that statutory definition would not deprive a jury of finding that it was an oil well under the facts of that particular case because of the formation and whatnot, the geological situation.
That's right, except I think the proper question for the jury, if casing head gas means what the statute says, is not whether it's an oil well or not, it's whether in the district where the oil operator perforated was an oil zone. Now that may be true in this track, but the Brown Dolomite over here may be higher, and there may be no oil in it. So I think the proper question is, at the levels he perforated or completed his well, is there oil there? And if there's oil, it presumably would be an oil zone, and the gas produced out of it would be casing gas. But if there's not oil, it's not. Which brings me to what the jury found in this case, Your Honor. The jury found, in response to the charge, that each of the two Energy Agger wells produced 6 barrels of oil a day from Brown Dolomite. And I prepared two diagrams that simply summarize the evidence, although the diagram itself is not an exhibit. To help explain this, if I could, I have shown this in opposing counsel. The first diagram basically shows the situation when Energy Agger wells were originally drilled in 1982. The Hodges number one is a gas well, and it has a completion in the Brown Dolomite, which these are not necessarily to scale these distances, which is shown here. The well has cumulatively produced 1,700,000 cubic feet over its 30-year life. Amarillo Oil said it has never produced any oil. Energy Agger offered some evidence in trial that it had produced approximately a tenth of a barrel leading up to the test. Energy Agger itself originally perforated its wells or completed them in the lower section, granted, only, and it turned in test to the Railroad Commission. The oil test on the number two well was 7 barrels. The gas was reported as too small to measure for zero. On the granted, the same thing. The oil was reported 16 barrels and the gas was reported too small to measure. That was the situation initially. And several months later, Energy Agger went back into the number two well and added some perforations up here in the Brown Dolomite. In addition, it installed a refrigeration unit on the surface to run the gas through at minus 25 degrees and liquefy some of the gas. At that point, my client brought suit. And it went to court and it requested a court-ordered test procedure because the parties couldn't agree on it. And there was a hearing to determine a proper way to test the well. The wells were tested, and the next diagram shows the results of those tests. This diagram shows the perforations that were added in the Brown Dolomite up higher. Two tests were run on the number three well, which still only perforated down here. When it was tested pursuant to the court procedure, it produced half a barrel of oil a day, averaged over 3 days, and about 1.5 cubic feet of gas.
The number two well was tested two different ways. First test is over on showing this side, when they tested the entire well bore open to production together. On that test, it produced 315,000 cubic feet of gas and 0.4 barrels of oil per day. Then the court had allowed the parties to go in and run a, what's called a packer, to isolate only the Brondola portion of the well bore. And on that test, the well produced zero oil and 412,000 cubic feet of gas. The purpose of this test was to physically measure whether there was or was not producible oil in the Brondola line. It's the only evidence of what those wells could produce. No party did any other test, requested any other test, or requested any modification of the test. The position of Energy Agri throughout the trial was that the LTX liquid was oil. This is shown up here at the top, where they were running the gas, even during the coronary test, they were running it through refrigeration unit. And in fact, the amount of production of this liquid, this shell liquid, was about 6 barrels a day between the two wells. What the evidence shown is what Energy Agri turned into the Railroad Commission. Now, that was their position, the LTX liquid was oil. The court instructed the jury, gave an instruction of oil that would make it impossible or improper to count LTX liquid as oil. But the jury, in fact, found that each of the oils was capable of producing 6 barrels a day from the ground dolomite, and there's nothing else in the record that could support that other than the LTX liquid.
I'm sorry, counsel. Excuse me, I'm not quite with you on this charge. Are you criticizing the charge?
No, Your Honor, I'm not.
The jury was prevented from... How can the charge be right, with your view, if you think they were prevented from making a straight answer?
I don't contend they were prevented from making a straight answer. I contend they disregarded it. And I deduce that from the fact there's no other evidence to support the charge other than the LTX liquid to support the answer to the verdict other than the LTX liquid. So I'm simply giving the court my reasoning. The only way they could have gotten their answer is by considering the LTX liquid as oil.
That's basically the case.
I think it's a big important part of the case. But I would say that even if there never had been an LTX unit for it, and even though there was real oil production down here, it would still be improper.
I think that there's a piece of gas from the oil well operator come up and start producing gas from the gas pump.
But those are the two questions. Now, on appeal, after the Railroad Commission and the Austin Court of Appeals ruled that LTX liquid is not oil, Energy Agri has argued that there was other evidence of oil production in Brondola, and particularly they argued that the Amarillo Oil Company gas well itself produced oil from the Brondola mine before it was completed. And the evidence of this, I believe, according to the evidence most favorable to Energy Agri, was that the gas well produced 3 to 4 gallons of oil over a 30-day period, which I believe figures out to be a little less than 3 one-thousandths of a barrel a day.
The time's up, counsel. You'll have an opportunity to close it, of course. Fivey, are you going to argue?
Mr. Brother Fivey and Mr. Paul Riley will present argument for it. I respond to the interview item about it. I know this court would better hear from real oil and gas authority than somebody who barely studied it. But one of the things this case presents is a reaffirmation that life is not always as it appears to the beholder. We have under controversy white oil. And there's a lot of argument in the trial, both this case and such a criminal case, about whether it's oil because it don't look like oil. It's not black. It's not some heavy viscosity. It's white or it's amber. And it looks more like gasoline. But we're not left with what just appears. We're left with a party, the petitioner in this case, Amarillo Oil Company. And here's the two oil companies fighting. Amarillo Oil Company, as the record shows, everybody owns a Pioneer Natural Gas Company. This is the primary case that is at the threshold of a giant battle in the entire panhandle of Texas between the gas producers and the independent oil operators. Our clients are the independent oil operators.
You say it's the big guys, the little guys.
Yes, sir. And that's important. Not just because of the size of the party. That's just the fact. That's not what's determined. But it gives you a look at the real issue that's before the court.
What difference does it make?
It makes a lot of difference. Your Honor, because you have to look at the arguments that are being made. And because there are five cases before the court, one of which has been determined, and I should say only four. One case was determined by the Fifth Circuit. The policy issues were not determined, but two should be determined by this court. Some in this case. Those cases are, and I just supply a letter brief, because many of the cases were not cited because they weren't on record at the time our response was filed. Colorado Interstate versus Tupper was the Fifth Circuit case I'm talking about. It was a summary judgment by Judge up in Maine, which is fine. And that was affirmed by the Fifth Circuit. But I think this court needs to look at that case because it tells you what can happen if the wrong interpretation is applied. Second, Huffalo versus Railroad Commission of Texas. That's a case that's pending before this court at this time. The Henry Stowers Oil and Gas Company, which is before the Tenth Circuit. That's the big case. That's the case where the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission has ruled. And let me share with this court just very briefly what that, and I want to cite an authority, but I think the court ought to read it. It's brand new, and I'm excited. I'll give it to you from St. Mary's Law Review. It's by Baron W. Dyer. Now, give me that letter brief. You may think when I cite this law journal article, it's contrary to opposition. It is. Again, mine is not always as it appears to be. Mr. Bellman is a member of the firm that represents the gas industry. And in this case, I'll give you a citation here. Remember, this is their view, but there are some facts stated in this law journal that are critical for the court's consideration, including listen to what FERC has done, Federal Energy Regulatory Commission. The administrative law judge ruled against the oil operators on both white oil and high perforations issues. The judge found that virtually all sections of the Panhandle field,
which were presently located above sea level,
were gas strata,
not oil strata, so Cajun Head gas could not be produced from any of these zones.
Cajun Head gas could not, Cajun Head gas could be produced only from zones below oil gas contact.
Nearly all of the brown oil formation
was found
above this gas oil level. Thus, the administrative law judge found that virtually all gas produced from the brown oil formation was not true Cajun Head gas, but was instead natural gas which had been dedicated to interstate commerce by the gas operator.
That, Your Honor, I think directly answers your question why the real issue here is the gas interest versus the oil interest, because it is all enveloping and it results from just exactly like Mr. Reedley said. Nobody's ever said what Cajun Head gas is.
Except the statute.
Well, let me say, everybody says what Cajun Head gas is, but they only say what it is. For instance, the documents in this case, which should be considered. That is, the oil and gas lease say what Cajun Head gas is, what rights were given, and what rights were reserved. For instance, only the dry gas rights were given in that document. Reserved were specifically oil and Cajun Head gas. The other cases I've asked this court to take into consideration for this case, and then the Dorchester versus Harlow case, and that case was writ pending. The Amarillo court held that it had a primary jurisdiction, that the Railroad Commission had a primary jurisdiction to classify the railroad. I do not disagree with that holding. I think that is correct. I think it applies in this case. And it's critical because once the Railroad Commission classified their well as a gas well and oil well, then the issue of what is Cajun Head gas comes into play. The court also stated that the Railroad Commission had in these two cases classified these wells as oil wells. Now the issue of questions I think before the court are just like Mr. Bates said, what is Cajun Head gas? And then right in the context of gas and oil rights. Then, what is the effect of a 1935 determination of the Railroad Commission? And that's in our brief. And Mr. Reedley is correct in his statements, but it must be remembered. We're talking about a particular gas field that has two characteristics distinguishing it from other areas of oil and gas production. One is most of the gas rights and the oil rights in that field have been separated and are treated separately, conveyed separately, and treated separately. Second, is the 1935 classification by the Railroad Commission that says, and it eliminates the argument of strata and formations and zones. It says this is a common reservoir. Why is that important? Because we're not talking about a commingling. We're talking about a right to produce from a common reservoir. For instance, the red cane north of the battlefield has seen red lights, the one above the other. You couldn't produce out of both red or all out of one reservoir and gas out of another reservoir. That's a key and a basic distinction. And then we're left with you've got to consider, because no evidence against space evidence has been raised. And I almost overlooked the importance of some testimony in this case from John Rogers, who was the Railroad Commission for 21 years. He was the district director of the Railroad Commission District in Tampa, which is the top 26 counties up there. And Mr. Rogers testified as a witness in this case on pages 15 and 16 of our response. We set that out. Number one, the Railroad Commission considered the brown dolomite, the granite wash, and the granite formations as constituting a continental core. Number two, the Panhandle field is an associated oil and gas reservoir. Three, under the applicable Railroad Commission rules and regulations, it was permissible for oil or gas operators to drill, perforate, and produce an oil well or gas well from any or all of the formations within that continental reservoir. Four, the Railroad Commission considered all the oil and gas produced from all perforations in the well within the common reservoir in determining the gas oil ratio, and the difference between an oil well and a gas well is dependent on one thing, and that's the ratio. If it produces one barrel of oil to 100,000 cubic feet of gas,
yes,
an oil well. If it's less, it's a gas well.
Is there anything in the lease that would prevent agri-energy from perforating in the brown dolomite?
No, sir. I will wait for that, and I'll turn it over to Mr. Johnson.
May it please the court, let me just pick up.
Wait for me, I'll let it go.
And
then I'll answer to
the question, Your Honor, just get off. There is nothing in the lease in this case which makes any kind of indication of a horizontal severance of the reservoir, as Mr. Friedley would have the court rule.
The lease instrument, which is really what this case, if it is a title case legitimately, is about, turns on the terms of that instrument.
And both the oil rights and the gas rights in this case derive from a common source of title.
And you can see, Dan, that the Railroad Commission cannot pass on title, and the Court of Appeals was wrong.
I don't agree they were wrong. I wish they had said it a little differently. The Railroad Commission certainly cannot determine title. But if we are correct that under this lease, and under the terms of this lease, that the classification of the well is determinative of the type of the lease, as Sergeant mentioned, the lease speaks in terms of oil, gas produced from a well producing gas only, and gas produced from an oil well. It doesn't speak in terms of stratum produced from rock formations, which is produced from. It talks about the type of well that the hydrocarbons are produced from. And what we are saying is, the classification of the well is a matter properly for the Railroad Commission to decide. It is specifically designated under their statutory authority to determine the proper gas oil ratio of wells and to classify wells. In fact, the point of error number three raised by Amber Oil in this case is a direct attack on the well classification. The point of error says the Court of Appeals erred in holding that the anti-agri wells were oil wells under the applicable statutes and Railroad Commission rules. Well, the Railroad Commission is entitled to interpret its own rules and determine these well classifications. So what we are saying is the Court of Appeals might
better said
the title documents grant oil and casinghead gas to Energy Agra. It is our opinion that oil and casinghead gas is that which is produced from an oil well, and the classification of the oil well is properly for the Railroad to decide.
How did that jury disagree? Do you have it for you?
I did.
Well, don't let me interrupt your argument. Go ahead.
The jury didn't even ask about what was the producing horizon in the brown dolomite, in the Kimberlin number 2 well and the Kimberlin number 3 well, except for our client's wells, productive of gas only. The jury answered no.
There was a second question.
Was the producing horizon in such wells productive of oil? And the jury answered yes.
Did you frame those issues? Did you ask for those issues, or were those issues that Amarillo Oil wanted?
Those were Amarillo Oil issues. In fact, we were even given the opportunity to discuss them before we
were objecting to them on the ground that the Railroad Commission had already found it to be an oil.
We we moved for the regular verdict on that basis. I don't remember, yes, well, then we get the charge off on any of those, I'm sure. That the rail commission had determined the well classifications. What we object to most vigorously in the charge was the limitation by the trial judge of the definition of oil through that which the railroad commission has utilized in its statewide definition of a gas well. It is our position that this is a common law title dispute, and the common law terms ought to control, and that common law, an oil well is a well that produced any amount of oil. If the statutory definition of oil well determines it, then it turns on the gas oil ratio. And the railroad commission had determined, pursuant to its jurisdiction, that these wells satisfy the gas oil ratio for classification as an oil well. And John Rogers, the district director, testified that he was instructed by the railroad commission to include the liquids produced from the LTX unit as oil in making that determination of gas oil ratio. That determination by the railroad commission had never been challenged by Amarillo Oil Company at the railroad commission, which we believe they are required to do if they really are challenging the well classification. But in the charge, we felt that we were entitled to have a definition of oil, simply use the term oil, or define it if necessary as a statute defines it as crude petroleum oil, and let the jury decide if this oil or is it not oil. But our objections were overruled, and Amarillo Oil Company had the charge. It has been prepared with that change at all.
And what is your response to Mr. Reeler's argument that had the jury followed the instructions that were given, there was no way they could have reached the answer they did?
Well, there was independent evidence apart from the liquids produced in the LTX unit to verify that there was oil production in the brown dolomite. If brown dolomite is to be considered separately from the rest of the reservoir, there was testimony by a man named Jerry Bennett who saw a compressor on Amarillo's gas well at their request interested right as this lawsuit began to kind of enhance the gas production from the well. It was his testimony that he had inspected that compressor on two different occasions shortly before the trial and had found crude oil in the scrubber which separated the products coming out of their well.
Well,
it was undisputedly producing only from brown dolomite. So there was at the very least direct testimony from Mr. Bennett that their gas well produced oil from brown dolomite.
Yes, that's more than a simple fellow.
Yes, Your Honor, I am. The well, the energy ag wells have never been were never allowed to produce under normal conditions prior to trial. They were enjoined from producing before they were even put in operation. And the only evidence about their production came from tests created, selected, and conducted by Amarillo Oil Company. Those were the court order tests that Mr. Reeley first.
They were not court orders.
They were their discovery request, which the court allowed them to do. But that was their test condition. And there was testimony at trial that back-to-back pressure which was kept on the well would have impeded the flow of liquids into the well bore. And that again is additional evidence
for the jury's finding.
We do believe that the jury should not have been limited to a regulatory definition of oil if in fact the railroad commission's role played no part in this case. I want to come back one second to Mr. Reeder made his argument, which I think is maybe the essence of this lawsuit, when he says what mine is mine, what's yours is mine too. And I think the gas companies are at least as guilty as they have position. They want to take the gas, they can produce all the gas, which was natural gas in the reservoir. When the gas then bubbles out of the oil, and part of the oil, they want to produce that too. And take what was originally oil as well as gas. And there was testimony in this case from Mr. Mike Boat, from Mr. Dan Michael, who's a geologist, Mike Boat is a chemist, that in fact the liquids produced through the LTX unit originated in the oil. The V contained components of what was crude oil at original reservoir conditions. And Mr. Michael testified, and it's an undisputed physical fact in all these cases, that the gas, what even the gas producers are producing from the brown dolomite, is getting wetter over time. It has a greater and greater liquid content. And there's a simple physical reason for that. Because the oil is being retained in the reservoir is vaporized. All the gas, the natural gas that is produced from the reservoir, is kind of like a soda bottle. That gas that was down the liquid now bubbling up, and that's being produced by the gas tank too. So they want not only the natural gas that they were entitled to originate, but they want also the components of the oil that they have now vaporized from their own production. And there's evidence in this case that those LTX unit power components, LTX unit liquids, are components of the crude oil. So that's why we believe jury should at least have not allowed to pass on that.
But there was nonetheless sufficient evidence. There was
some evidence.
Totally apart from the LTX liquids to support the jury's findings.
Come
back to the title document one more time.
the title
documents,
the original lease device, the substances, my
oil,
gas producing,
my well for gas only
is found.
I think it's unquestionable. I
mean, Mr. Bennett said that we're not crude oil from the gas well, but
well, that
in fact satisfies that definition. And then gas
from an oil well.
And the lease
also then
refers to
royalty on casing head gas.
The use of the terms casing head gas and gas produced from an oil well interchangeably.
And
all we are saying is, let's use those terms as they were used in the lease.
But casing head gas means
gas produced from an oil well on this lease.
And it's the Railroad Commission's function to decide what is an oil well.
And if they don't believe it's an oil well, to challenge that in the Railroad Commission
and let them use their expertise to make underlying fact findings that result in termination of that sort.
With all these cases that are coming up, I have a common question as to whether or not it should have gone before the Railroad Commission first.
I think that the title cases all probably have that in them, Your Honor. I know the title case, which is before this court, has the same point at issue. And in fact, the Anvil Court of Appeals appears, I think by all accounts now, appears to have just simply decided absolutely contradictory to itself in the two cases on the primary jurisdiction question.
There are proceedings currently before the Railroad Commission right now.
Awaiting decision
has been extended
here again. Not only in the Hubbo case, which is before this court, but a separate proceeding to redetermine that Panhandle Field is a common reservoir in all formations, and to allocate the production among the producers and the owners of interest in that reservoir.
That's proceeding,
which they refer to in a brief, I believe it's document number 10-017, if I'm very correct,
has not been resolved yet.
But again, we say today that the jurisdiction of the Railroad Commission to allocate the production from this field.
If all these cases are in the trial jury, where they're decided with the production is separate, every level, very well, that's going to be an enormous burden on the courts. And I don't think that's what the legislature contemplated when it delegated authority to the Railroad Commission to regulate the reservoirs, to determine what is a common reservoir, and to determine well classifications, gas oil ratios,
well spacing, and the kinds of things that limit the right of owners to produce what they own. Now that is, it's
an inevitable aspect of the Railroad Commission jurisdiction that it
has on the ability to exploit one's title.
The Railroad Commission police power has been upheld by this court, by the U.S. Supreme Court,
and we believe that they ought to be allowed to raise back.
And what we originally had asked in this case
was, in the ideals,
was that the decision be stayed until the Hubbo
was
resolved and the subsequent administrative
decision be resolved. And Real Oil Company now, having resisted that, is trying to superimpose the Court of Appeals case in the Hubbo case on this lawsuit and say that the law Court of Appeals has upset the LPS difference oil, well,
that therefore there's no evidence that we produce any oil.
How can you draft one case on another like that?
That demonstrates potential conflicts
in decisions when the Railroad Commission is not allowed to
exercise its jurisdiction. These kinds of ancillary defects.
How many billions of dollars are we talking about this whole field of that conservation?
Your Honor, I've heard every
assessment. I'm not sure I can say what that is. I think it's probably in the tens of billions. I wouldn't want to be covered. I don't remember.
They are in disagreement about holding its hand until the Railroad Commission finishes its work on the current proceeding.
I don't think in the posture of the case at this point, Your Honor, there's much to be gained. The court, the latest in all these cases, need a decision from this court on what is the event by the term casing head gas.
We believe
that this court ought to agree with what the Attorney General of Texas decided in 1940 in an opinion which could not be more explicit. Even using the statutory definition of casing
head gas, we simply ask this court, after more than 45 years of operating under that assumption and the Railroad Commission operating under that assumption, that ought to be the law.
Were the facts set out in that Attorney General's opinion?
It was addressed to the various definitions in the statute that had been enacted in 1935.
I understand, but was it factually in point, the underlying controversy with the facts of this case?
I think if I understand Your Honor's question, it was, because I believe most of the disputes that gave rise to that opinion were based on the
Well, I think that normally one thinks of casing head gas as being generated in connection with the production of oil. I think that would be sort of the traditional. I'm not trying to get on one side or the other of the argument. I think that is the traditional concept. Was that the case in the Attorney General's opinion in 1940? In other words, Were they talking about gas that was being produced in connection with the production of oil, distinguished from a separate gas strata?
I don't think that they had a particular dispute here in contemplation. I think
isn't that what gives us the trouble here is that you've got the gas coming not only from the production of oil, but you also have it coming from a, what was being acknowledged as a pure gas stratum.
Well, first of all, it's not a pure gas stratum, and the evidence in this case particularly disproves that.
Why is the evidence in this case against it being a pure gas stratum?
Well, you have expert opinion testimony that there's oil in the Brown Dolomite.
That's
you
the have Rogers testimony.
I'm sorry?
Is that the John Rogers testimony?
Well, it was Dan Michaels' testimony, who's a geologist. You have the testimony from Mr. Jerry Bennett, who saw the oil being produced in Amarillo Oil's own gas well out of the Brown Dolomite. You have the fact that it's a common reservoir, and that the gas in the Brown Dolomite itself, again, testimony from Mr. Michael, is increasing in liquid content. The only place that liquid can come from is from oil in the same area of the reservoir. That's why we keep saying you can't sever out this. If they wanted to, they could have severed it, but they didn't do that. It's all part of the common reservoir. The gas up here is still in association with the oil, even if the oil is coming down here. It's a very complex reservoir. I think if the court reads some of the law journals, the articles that are written about this reservoir, there are oil pools at all kinds of levels throughout here. But when all the gas has been produced out of the gas cap, which the gas companies have essentially done, the gas is bubbling up from what was in the oil. And that is gas that originated in the oil and is consistent with the traditional understanding of Casein Head gas. And I specifically refer this court and urge the court to read very carefully the decision by the Commission of Appeals in Reynolds versus McMahon Oil and Gas Company, in which the phenomenon of the gas coming out of the oil is explained and discussed in great detail. And we have asked all these cases that this court adhere to its decision in adopting the opinion of the Commission of Appeals in Reynolds that Casein Head gas is part oil and part gas, that it originates in the oil in the ground, and then when it bubbles out as reservoir pressure is depleted over time, it doesn't lose its legal character as deriving from the oil, but it simply then becomes Casein Head gas, which the court there held was part of the oil rights.
What is the separation, if any, between the dolomite and the granite? What depth are each of those?
Oh, I don't remember the specific figures, Your Honor.
What is their separation? That's the point.
There are degrees of separation, I think, depending on where field one is talking about. But it is undisputed in the Railroad Commission established back in 1935 that they are all ultimately interconnected. There is no division which cuts off one formation from the other throughout the reservoir. There's a free flow of hydrocarbons exists throughout that reservoir. Even if there is there's a level of shale there that prevents communication. There's a dispute in expert testimony in this case about whether there are breaks in the shale there. But they are all part of legally what has been designated as a common reservoir throughout all those formations.
If you want this court to answer the question of what is Casein Head gas, do you want the court to answer the question as the Attorney General in 1940 answered it? Is that your answer, or is there some other answer you want?
Our position is consistent with the Attorney General's decision in 1940.
But we've got to write. The hardest intellectual exercise that people ever have to engage in. They have to quit talking and they have to write.
Yes.
And what would you have us write?
We would have you write that the definition of Casein Head gas is what the Attorney General said in 1940 in construing the statutory definition. And we would have the court say that under the terms of this lease on this case, where the terms Casein Head gas and gas produced from an oil well are used interchangeably, that that's what it means. And those two concepts are entirely consistent.
And that is, it's all gas produced from an oil well so long as it's within the allowable ratio.
Yes, Your Honor.
And what are the allowable ratios and who sets them?
The allowable ratios of the Panhandle Field are 100,000 cubic feet of gas per barrel of oil. And the same definition to Congress that applies, by the way, to gas wells. There's nothing that bars a gas operator from going down here in the Granite Wash. They can produce throughout all those formations too, so long as they stay within the ratio for a gas well.
Which is what?
Which is the opposite, less than 100,000
feet of gas or less, even or more per barrel of oil.
That's set by the Railroad Commission?
That's set both by the Railroad Commission and by statute.
That statute, though.
So we would ask that the court either affirm the decision of the Court of Appeals or, in the alternative, affirm the decision of the trial court, and we hope to provide some guidance to the litigants in all these cases so that there'll be some consistency throughout.
Thank you. Reeve, are you going to close?
Your Honor, one question that Chief Justice Hill raised was, what was the 1940 Attorney General opinion point? Does it raise this fact issue? And the answer to that is it does not. And the reason you can tell that is because the opinion states in the body of it that casing head gas is gas necessarily produced with the oil. The only gas that's necessarily produced is the gas in the oil stratum. All you have to do is not put holes in your pipe in the gas stratum and you won't get the gas. The reason that AG went into that is because it has to do with the purpose of the statute, the 1935 statute, that set up these definitions. The history is set out in the orders that are attached to the brief and the statute itself. But in the Panhandle field, the history was that the people would drill oil wells, and then they would just open the well up all the way up through the gas zone and blow the gas to the atmosphere. And then after that, they were using the gas for some very wasteful burning of carbon black uses. And the legislature specifically addressed this problem and said, you can't do this. For gas from the gas zone, the normal gas, we're going to make you use that for a good beneficial purpose. But for casing head gas, you can burn that any way you want to. You can burn it in even an inefficient carbon black plant. Because we want you to get the oil. It's important to produce the oil. And so the Attorney General himself recognized the purpose of the definition was to limit the gas, it's called casing head gas, to the gas that's necessarily produced with the oil, which is that gas that is mixed in with the oil.
Is that what was being flared in all of the fields during that period of time?
Yes, sir.
Burning at night. Was that the casing head gas that was being burned off?
At first it was gas from oil wells because they didn't have a market for the gas and they were blowing it to the atmosphere. Later they brought in these carbon black plants where all they would do with the gas is burn it, let all the burning energy just waste and then scrape or manufacture the soot into a chemical that they could use. And some of those plants were very inefficient at that.
So what is your answer to the question that Mr. Nively says we must answer? What is casing head gas? What is the meaning of casing?
The proper answer in the context of these facts, which have never been before any court of this state, any Supreme Court decision of this state, except for these recent cases, was not in the Attorney General's opinion. The answer is the statutory definition of casing head gas controls. The statute does not make gas, the classification of the well, important. It doesn't say gas from an oil well is casing head gas. It doesn't say gas from a reservoir that contains oil is casing head gas. It says casing head gas is limited to gas produced from an oil stratum and produced from the stratum with oil. And if the reservoir contains both an oil stratum and a gas stratum, casing head gas is only that gas that comes out of the oil stratum portion of the reservoir.
The way you phrased your answers when you said within the context of the facts of this case, suggests that perhaps you're saying that there should be a different definition of casing head gas depending upon the facts of the case?
I'm sorry, Your Honor, I may have misspoke. I do not believe that's true. I think the definition should be consistent. The
definition should be consistent.
If the application might vary according to the physical facts, but the definition should be consistent.
The definition you would like for us to adopt is the one that's in the statute.
That's correct. That's correct. And the reason, again, that's important in this case is that was the law when these parties entered into their agreements in 1952. And as I went through before, I cannot conceive of how the parties could have had any other idea in their mind than that they were dividing these rights so that the party that bought the gas well had the exclusive right to produce the gas. So otherwise, he wasn't getting very much. He was just getting a right to compete for gas at a 6-to-1 disadvantage. We are not challenging, in this case, the classification of this well.
I think that's not the issue. We have argued, we pointed out in the brief that the commission has determined that LTX liquid is not oil. So there's, I'd say, at least a serious question based on that, that the wells were properly classified. But that's not the issue. The Railroad Commission can't change title. The proceeding that it's got going now cannot change the title. The analogy I would use is the slant hole cases. The commission has the exclusive power to tell offsetting tract owners how much they can produce and to balance their rights. But it can't authorize the man over here to walk over and drill his well on the other man's tract. That's title. That's for the court. Likewise, the commission cannot authorize the man on tract A to drill a slant hole from bottom and under tract B's, the other man's tract, and produce the oil. That's title. That's been settled by a lot of court decisions. I submit that that's the same situation here. Justice McGarland asked whether there was any prohibition on Energy Agri producing the brown dolomite by name, and there's not. But our position is that they did only reserve Kissimmee gas. They conveyed all their other rights, and the statute says that's gas into oil stratum with oil. And if the oil stratum is only here, wherever it is in any of the other cases, fact question, but wherever that is, that's the limit of their rights, just like a neighboring tract has a different ownership. And they can go down and produce anything that comes out of that oil, gas or oil, but they can't come up to adapt its production with gas only. And likewise, we cannot go down to the oil zone and try to suppress oil production and just bubble off the gas in the oil. I can imagine the lawsuit we would have if there was substantial oil and gas on the trying to do that.
But what good can come out of the present Railroad Commission proceedings if either one of you is going to challenge it as divesting your title, however it goes?
Your Honor, I think the Railroad Commission is perfectly within its rights to consider the conservation aspects of where new wells can be produced. Contrary to what Mr. Knight said, not all the rights are split up here. There are many tracts where a party owns both oil and gas rights, and the Commission, as a conservation matter, has a perfect right to tell people whether it's good conservation to only perforate down here or whether under the circumstances they will let you perforate up here. But if the parties have divided their ownership, the commission can't tell Mr. A down here that only owns the oil that he can come up and produce the gas, even though that may be perfectly acceptable of a conservation practice, any more than they could tell this man that he could drill a slant hole on somebody else's well.
Well, do you see any scenario where the Railroad Commission might resolve this in some way that would be acceptable?
I do not believe so, Your Honor. I think the commission in both proceedings, the one that's on appeal and the one that's going on now, has very explicitly recognized that it does not have the right to determine title. As a matter of fact, it has rejected arguments that have been made on the basis that it doesn't have that jurisdiction. It said that is for the courts. We're not going to address that. We're talking conservation practice. It's still up to the courts to decide who owns what.
So you would urge us to get on with our opinion in this case, huh?
I would, Your Honor. I think that's a common request from all the parties because there is so much litigation. We would like to have the court settle the issue. I guess I have just a few minutes left for the evidence question. I would submit the reference to the gas well producing oil. The evidence was most favorable to the other side. It was at a rate of 3,000. Of a barrel a day, about a nickel's worth of oil. I don't think that does rise to past the scintilla. I don't think that's enough to make this an oil strand. I don't think it's enough to make the gas out of their casing gas as a matter of law. Mr. Nisley referred to an expert testifying that the well, in his opinion, will produce oil from the brown dolomite. In fact, the evidence that's discussed in the brief, Dan Michael said, in his opinion, the brown dolomite would produce oil, and the only basis he gave for that was that he understood, he heard that on the test, the brown dolomite produced 1 1/3 barrels, 1.33 barrels was his testimony. In fact, there was that 1.33 barrels over 3 days, but it was from the whole zone, both the deep zone and the top zone, and the evidence was undisputed on that, and the evidence was also undisputed that when you only tested the top zone, it was zero oil. And the other side hasn't really questioned
But how was the issue submitted to the jury? It was just simply, was the gas capable, was the well capable of producing oil, wasn't it?
It was whether the well was capable of producing oil from the Brown Dolomite. Because my client never challenged their right to produce the granite, the deeper zone. And the hand jury said, yes, there was oil, and yes, it produced 6 barrels a day.
From Brown Dolomite?
From the Brown Dolomite.
In both instances, both answers.
That's right. The other, another I simply have to refer to the brief for the other specific answers to the quite the no evidence question, because we tried to analyze the specific evidence and point out why there's no evidence. I'd just like to conclude that I think the consideration of the facts in this case highlights the unreasonableness of Energy Agri's position, because the parties in 1953 knew the Brown Dolomite was a gas stratum. They already had a well that was producing gas only there. They simply couldn't have intended that a few barrels of oil from a deeper zone, or even drops of oil, thousands of a barrel of oil from the Brown Dolomite zone, could have been a license to the oil operator to produce thousands of dollars worth of gas that was otherwise recoverable by the gas well. They could not have intended that the oil rights owner be able to liquefy his gas at the surface and call it oil. Mr. Nisley argues that some of this gas used to be oil. I think another argument you can make is if I go out and acquire the dinosaur rights on the theory that both oil and gas evolved from prehistoric creatures, that I could come in and drill a well on the basis that it all used to be plants and dinosaurs. I think we have to take a little bit more practical approach to this in order to get any resolution of the property rights. I would submit the case should be reversed and rendered both on the jurisdiction issue because casing head gas is not all gas from the oil well, is what the statute says, and that it should further be reversed and rendered on the evidence point, because the evidence conclusively establishes that the Brown Dolomite, as encountered in the two Energy Agri wells, is not an oil stratum. The gas is not casing the gas.
Counsel, what's your best estimate of how much money we talk about in this whole field?
Right, I don't know if billions is the word. I certainly think it involves hundreds of millions of dollars. But that's, I would have to disclaim, like Mr. Nisley, a specific idea. I guess maybe the last thing I would say with my 3 minutes is Mr. Fivey went through all the different proceedings involved here. I would simply say, although there are certain issues that may have far-reaching effect that arise in this case, there are many differences in the context, in the acreage, in the title instruments, in all these cases. And the court is not deciding every case, or cannot decide every case, even if it wanted to, which I'm sure it doesn't with this case. I can't go through each description in May, but I think that some of those cases involve more narrow issues.
I want to thank all three counsel for excellent presentations. We're going to take a short break now, about 10 minutes.
You want to please rise? All right.